relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
She's the chair of the Election Integrity Alliance, former attorney to President Donald Trump, and we're delighted to welcome our special guest host, Jenna Ellis.
Welcome, welcome to America First with Dr. Sebastian Gorka. That's my best impression of Seb. I think I was talking to the producers earlier and said apparently there have been a lot of guest hosts that have tried to impersonate the great Seb Gorka. I think we should have a contest. That would be amazing. And let him pick who can be the best impersonator of the great Dr. Sebastian Gorka. But I'm Jenna Ellis. I am filling in today for the wonderful good friend of mine that is Seb. And here on America First, we have so much to talk about today. Thank you so much for joining me on this Friday. The big news, of course, is coming out of Bedminster, New Jersey. President Trump, who filed and is filing lawsuits against big tech. And this is something that I agree with my friend Alan Dershowitz is going to be the most important case in the 21st century. And there have been so many people, of course, on the Democrat side and even some of these so-called rhino conservatives that are trying to minimize that and just push back against everything and try to just say, well, this is President Trump stuff. So, of course, it's poorly written. Of course, it's not going to survive. Of course, it's going to be ridiculous. But we need to get to the merits of this claim. We need to talk about why this is going to be an important lawsuit. And if you didn't read it yet, you should. We'll be talking also about this op-ed. If you're watching on Rumble or on video, you can see me holding this up. This is the Wall Street Journal op-ed from President Donald J. Trump, Why I'm Suing Big Tech. And if you have not seen my show, I am at Jenna Ellis ESQ, and I also host a show on Real America's Voice. Go to americasvoice.news. We are on Roku, Pluto TV, all across the digital platforms. I host a show called Just the Truth every weeknight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And I had my good friend Dan Kapalis, who is one of the most prolific civil litigators, on for the entire hour on Wednesday. And we were talking and going, doing a deep dive into this lawsuit. He read the whole thing and we spent the whole hour. Definitely go back and watch that. But watch Just the Truth on Real America's Voice. Follow me at Jenna Ellis ESQ. And I am always on America First every Wednesday with Sebastian Gorka. So we're going to have fun this 3 hours. We're going to be talking about big tech and a few other things that really concern concern you as America First patriots. And that's what we love to do on this show, what I know that Sebastian loves to do. So let's get right to it with my first guest, who is Harmeet Dhillon. She is a good friend of mine. We have worked together on a lot of lawsuits with the church issues in the midst of all of this COVID shutdown. She is the founder of Dhillon Law and also the president of the Center for American Liberty. And we're going to talk about some of these civil rights lawsuits. So, Harmeet, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Happy to be here today, Jenna.
Yeah, happy Friday. Thanks so much. So first, before we get into kind of, the merits of the Donald Trump lawsuit, you have, through the First Liberty Center, filed a civil rights lawsuit against the former California Secretary of State turned U.S. Senator Alex Padilla for banning attorney Rogan O'Handley. So, there are so many people, Harmeet, in this world that are fighting against big tech censorship. You're doing that now on behalf of Rogan. So why is this so important, and why are you confident that this is going to be successful?
Well, thanks for asking. I 100% agree with Alan Dershowitz that this issue is a seminal issue and a critical watershed issue in First Amendment law in the United States. This is not the first time that I have filed a lawsuit like this. I have been the lawyer in a lawsuit against Twitter for deplatforming a prominent Canadian feminist who was critical of a transgender troll, and for using the wrong pronoun according to the woke mob. She was removed from Twitter permanently, even though that wasn't a violation of Twitter's rules. That case is Murphy versus Twitter. So, we lost that case, and we lost that case because the court held in California and the Court of Appeals that the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, is virtually a get out of jail free card for any contract claim, any tort claim, and any deplatforming claim that a citizen might bring. So lawyers like I and other lawyers who are in this space have tried to, think about how you could, sort of bring a different kind of claim. And, the kind of claim that we brought for lawyer Rogan O'Handley is very different than a Communications Decency Act Section 230 issue, and so is are the president's three lawsuits. So in O'Handley versus Twitter, our client is well known in social media, as I think had about 3 million followers in different platforms until this Twitter incident happened, called DC Drano. And Rogan, after the election of November 2020, called for audits in various states where there were unexplained discrepancies in the results. And he had never had any strikes or any problems with Twitter before. And he was ultimately deplatformed after posting a photograph of the Capitol with barbed wire around it, saying something to the effect of highest number of votes ever. In other words, mocking the Democrat narrative, but not in a untruthful way. That is considered opinion under the First Amendment. So,
right.
Stepping back, so what happened? The state of California used $35 million of taxpayer money, unallocated by the legislature, to quote unquote improve election integrity and election security, and really just do messaging around that. They did a closed bid contract to liberal vendors. They picked a vendor, SKD Knickerbocker, which is a pipeline to the Biden White House, by the way, also a consultant to the Biden administration. And this company, hired by our Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, spent $35 million supposedly to inform the public how to vote correctly before the election. What they were really doing, as we have found out from Public Records Act responses in this case, is they were drawing up a list for California Secretary of State of offensive social media posts that were critical of his and other liberal Democrats' runnings of elections in different states, and asking Twitter and other social media companies through back channels that had been established for this purpose of this project to take those posts down. And so every day, wow. SKD Knickerbocker would produce lists of spreadsheets of posts they didn't like. And by the way, this was in conjunction with the National Association of Secretaries of State, too, a D.C. organization of National Secretaries of State, which I never heard of before this lawsuit. Hmm. But they were also coordinating this in other states. So as a result of this coordination between the state and private companies, So that's in a critical part of our lawsuit and that lawsuit.
And President Trump's lawsuit. I mean, because he doesn't use the word collusion, but it is coordination, and he actually talks about that in his op-ed. But this then is, that's really the mechanism that then brings all of this under the banner of the First Amendment, right? Because essentially, I mean, are you arguing as well that that now with this coordination, that big tech has essentially become a state actor?
Yes. So we specifically allege in our lawsuit that there's a violation of the First Amendment under Section 1985 of the Civil Rights Act. So Section 1985 is a Klan Act era law that prevents private companies from colluding with government entities to deprive citizens of their civil rights, whatever they may be. And so this is a, you know, venerable law. It's an important law. And we are using that law to show that when the government colludes with uses a private actor as its agent, basically, that's a violation of the First Amendment. And so that our theory ties it specifically to our client. I think President Trump's lawsuits have somewhat the same theory there. They do.
And I want to take a break here. And we're going to talk more with Harmeet Dhillon. You're getting a lot of legal analysis today, and we are going to be talking much, much more about censorship, about big tech and all of that when we come right back here on America First with Dr. Sebastian Gorka. I'm not Sebastian Gorka, but I'm filling in for him today. I'm Jenna Ellis. We'll be right back here on America First.
Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. This is America First with Sebastian Gorka. Now back to our guest host, Jenna Ellis.
Welcome back to America First with Jenna Ellis today. So you can follow me at Jenna Ellis ESQ across all of the social media platforms, because guess what? I have not been canceled yet. So follow me while you can at Jenna Ellis ESQ, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Gab, Parler. I'm going to be on Getter. Have not yet joined that platform, but that will be interesting. So we're talking, of course, today about the big tech lawsuits and pushing back against this whole censorship narrative. And my special guest is Harmeet Dhillon, who's been talking about her lawsuit with the First Liberty Center and or Center for American Liberty. Sorry, our friends at First Liberty are also great, but she is the Center for American Liberty. And you can follow her at PNJABAN on Twitter. And Harmeet, before the break, we were talking about the importance of these lawsuits and why this deep dive and this understanding of the law and the arguments, these really creative arguments that you and President Trump and others are now bringing. And I think it's so simplistic when people go on Twitter and they see, you know, the hot take from, you know, some rando liberal who's saying, oh, well, this doesn't have merit because big tech isn't government, so they're not a state actor. And they really need to understand more in depth the legal strategy behind this. So you were explaining that and then also the class action nature of this.
Yes. So I think that's really critical is that, look, there are a lot of theories out there. We have seen, for example, Prager University brought a lawsuit a couple of years back saying that, you know, YouTube was effectively the public square under a Supreme Court case called Pruneyard. And, you know, court did not agree with that. And so that's an argument that a lot of people have made. And even there's legislation pending from Republicans to try to, or has been legislation pending to try to say that, you know, these companies should be regulated as public utilities. And maybe they should be. I'm not making that argument at all in our lawsuit or otherwise. What I'm saying is that under existing law, where the government that is trying to get you, whether it be through a Fourth Amendment means, Fifth Amendment means, First Amendment means, Second Amendment means, tries to get around a state action bar by using a, you know, private company crony, henchman, or agent, that's also illegal and unconstitutional, because that happened in the South. That happened, you know, during the civil rights struggles in our country. And this is a civil rights struggle. So the government can't censor you, and the government can't sort of, you know, pay middlemen to censor you either. And that's what happened in our case. And that's what President Trump is arguing has happened in his case. And, you know, part of what's referred to by evidence in the Trump lawsuits is communications that we don't have, communications that are blacked out between Fauci and Zuckerberg. And, you know, how can we help? And boy, Zuckerberg and his ilk really, quote unquote, helped out a lot in our elections through nonprofit contributions. And they appear to have helped out by, quote unquote, shaping the narrative about those elections, not to mention other things like vaccination pushes and things like that. So We don't know a lot here in some of these instances, but what my lawsuit is based on is Public Records Act requests that Judicial Watch did. And, you know, we're going to be expanding on those in the discovery process. And I'm sure the Trump lawsuits are sort of, you know, in the same vein. We have only seen the tip of the iceberg, and these people are using our...
And that's exactly where we have to get to the place. I think discovery is going to be very critical in these cases. So how confident are you that you can get to that phase and survive, at least in your case with Rogan O'Hanley, survive motions to dismiss or other? I mean, I look at President Trump's lawsuit and the venue, the forum selection is interesting in that case. I'm anticipating potentially that, you know, big tech is going to try to remove that to California to a more friendly venue. So some of these more procedural issues up front. What is your perspective on the confidence of getting your case to the discovery phase?
Yeah, so our case is interesting. It involves a mix of different actors. It involves two private companies, Twitter, FKD Knickerbocker. It involves a so-called nonprofit, National Association of Secretaries of State. And then importantly, it involves both public figures acting in their public capacity, the Secretary of State of California and the former Secretary of State is now acting in his private capacity, as well as specific employees who did the censoring request. So, you know, with all of those public employees, they have certain defenses that the private companies don't have. They're going to, I'm sure, going to make defenses about qualified immunity and other government immunities from suit. So that's going to be interesting. The private entities have, you know, are virtually certain to make motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. They're going to say, we're not agents of the government. We are simply, you know, doing our own thing. So that round of motions from the various defendants, I'm sure they're all going to make some sort of a motion, is likely to, you know, take a few months. You know, we're still in the process of serving the government entities. We've served some of the others. So I think you can anticipate a similar life cycle, if you will, in these other cases. But, you know, for a company to sue you and claim its terms of service bind you on a particular venue, you know, that's not infinite. And so nobody here is suing under Twitter's terms of service for breach of contract. That's not what anybody is doing here. They're, you know, it's something different altogether. So, you know, so it's a different theory. And so I seriously question whether they can say, oh, you know, my terms of service demand that you litigate against me in, you know, Timbuktu or Mars, and we're required to do that. So So I think that's going to be interesting. Also, I will add that the president's cases are styled as class action. So
right.
Which mine is not. Mine is for a specific defendant. So in a class action, there is a whole other set of motions that are brought challenging whether a case may be certified as a class action on the basis of whether all of the plaintiffs have claims that are common, typical, whether the administration of justice is going to be advanced by doing these cases together as opposed to separately. So that's going to definitely, you know, be something that's heavily litigated potentially for over a year, I suspect, based on my experience in class action. That mm-hmm. part can take quite a bit to litigate.
And it may be that, I, of course, full disclaimer, you know, was counsel to the president. I'm not involved as an attorney in any way in the president's lawsuit here, other than just as a citizen supporting this type of litigation. I think that litigation does advance the law in ways that legislation can, but using the tool of civil litigation to advance the law and move the law forward and have that clarification of what the government can and can't do under the Constitution with these types of civil rights issues. That's really important. But I think, possibly, Hermie, that the reason that this was filed as a class action, potentially just to have the length and the duration, is potentially one of those strategic moves by President Trump's lawyers to get this to survive continually. So we're going to be right back in here on America First with Jenna Ellis today. And we're going to talk in another segment with Hermie Dillon, because we're getting some great legal analysis from her. She is an amazing civil litigator, and definitely follow her on Twitter at PNJABAN, or just search for Hermit Dillon. And she is the president of the Center for American Liberty. You can follow that at Liberty_Center. Of course, follow me as well across all of social media at Jenna Ellis ESQ. It's so important to have access to the public square like we do. That's why we put out our Twitter handles, right? So we're going to do a little bit more of this deep dive analysis on these issues when we come right back right here on America First.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America First.
Welcome back to America First with Jenna Ellis today, filling in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. And we are breaking down all of the ins and outs of these big tech lawsuits that are so incredibly important. I agree with my friend Alan Dershowitz, and which just shows Democrats and Republicans can agree on stuff. When we are talking about civil rights issues, when we're talking about the protections that the U.S. Constitution is supposed to provide for our liberties and freedoms. And helping me break this down this hour is my friend Hermit Dillon. She is the founder of Dillon Law and also the Center for American Liberty. So follow her on Twitter, on social media, before we all get banned until she wins her lawsuit at PNJABAN on Twitter, or just search for her name, Hermit Dillon. And Hermit, we're breaking these down, and you were talking before the break about this class action and the nature of that. And let's talk specifically, though, about your lawsuit for Rogan O'Handley and the specific evidence that you have to move this forward, and why you're confident that this is going to survive some of these more procedural issues and the motions to dismiss. And I think kind of the big picture of what people who are so concerned about big tech censorship, they know that this is unfair. We have a fundamental fairness understanding as Americans that we shouldn't be censored from these platforms. We should have access to public forums that are important, not only for our message, for speech that we want to put out there, but even for speech we disagree with. And so in your specific case, you were mentioning that, you know, there is specific evidence here that you want to have heard on the merits.
Yeah, so I think people on the sort of conservative side have a lot of different theories here. And I think my theories have evolved on these issues over the years, and I'm not sure I've reached the end of that evolution. But I think what I can say is, number one, on Communications Decency Act, Section 230, I don't think that the framers of it, back in 1996, during the Gingrich Congress, compromise there meant to preclude private contracts from being enforced, like terms of service, or preclude normal consumer protection statutes like false advertising, all of which have been struck down by CDA 230. So I think that, I'd like to see a normal application of that law that's hews to its original intent and its words. But look, I think what these people are trying to say, really, the big tech companies and the sneering, baboons in the media on these issues who are mocking these lawsuits, they're trying to say that, this sort of throwaway statute that was meant to give immunity in a specific narrow thing basically trumps the Constitution. It means these companies can do whatever they want. And that is, of course, ridiculous. The Constitution is a super norm. I would argue that the First Amendment, which I've been loving and fighting under since I was in college, is a central statute, and it is paramount in importance. And literally, our country was formed on the concept that the government can't tell you what to do, can't tell you how to worship, can't censor your speech, can't censor the press, and really must give freedom to its citizens in this regard.
I appreciate, Harmeet, I really appreciate that you also said that, your thinking has sort of, evolved in this. And I think how, because conservatives generally would like to say that, we're all for the free marketplace. And because big tech are private companies and the government should never be involved in that. And I think that that it's fair to say how they're interacting, especially with this theory of being state actors and how this is affecting speech and these protected rights, being able to evolve that thinking and say, okay, what should it look like? That's what good lawyers do. That's what good conservatives do. If we're conserving our rule of law, our U.S. Constitution, we should be considering these things and not just falling back to an analysis that doesn't quite work for the context that we're in right now.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there are a lot of armchair lawyers and Twitter lawyers who are real lawyers and not real lawyers who have deep thoughts on these issues. And they're not quite tested in the courtroom like mine and like some other lawyers have been. I had a very good conversation last night at dinner with Senator Rand Paul, who is a lover of liberty, I think has been very critical of big tech and all of that. But he's also critical of government overreach and doesn't want to see the government be put in the place of being the police, the speech police, like having too much regulation. So, I had a thoughtful conversation with him. We didn't agree on some of these issues, but I think I came away with some new things to think about. So I think really that's where I am, is that we really have to always keep an open mind, but also constantly be fighting.
100%. And Harmeet, that's such a great place to end our portion of the interview. I really appreciate you coming on to talk about all of this. And we wish you the best, of course, with the lawsuit. I'll have to have you on Just the Truth to talk more about this and, the next steps as we go forward. So I am Jenna Ellis, filling in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka right here on America First. Follow me right now across social media before I get censored at Jenna Ellis ESQ. And stick with us. We'll have another great guest coming right up.
America First.
Can you believe it? They are saying that they don't agree with America First. How do you say that?
Magnificent.
We are dancing in here. I always love the bumper music to America First. I am Jenna Ellis, and for the rest of this hour, I have my good friend Grant Stinchfield, who is, of course, the host of the wonderful 8 p.m. Eastern Time Stinchfield on Newsmax, where I am a contributor. So you will see us talking a lot on Newsmax, and he is also the host of a morning radio show out of LA, AM 70 The Answer. For those of us on the East Coast, we can still sleep in and listen to it. So that's great. So Grant, thanks so much for joining me today on America First.
Jenna, how cool is this? Usually I'm asking you the questions.
I know. This is so fun. Turnabout is fair play here in the media world. And This is so fun. And Grant, you know, you and I actually got to spend a lot of time in person together in Dallas with your amazing fiance, Amy. She's so fantastic in Dallas. And, you know, we went to dinner and we're talking about our mutual love and respect for the 45 and the president. And, you know, I want to get your take here on big tech. And I love that President Trump is still fighting these fights. I mean, he could have easily just said, you know what, peace out, America. I'm going to go and retire and let somebody else pick up the mantle. He is still always 100% in the fight for America First policies, not only in the policy realm, but now also in litigation. And that's so important for the future of America.
Well, you know, you and I have talked, obviously, and I truly believe that Republicans in general need to take a page out of what President Trump is doing and really what the Democrats are doing. I call it lawfare, and that's waging war in the courtrooms across America. It's the only way we're going to beat them back right now while they control Washington. So we've got to take the fight to the courtrooms. It's an uphill battle because, as you know, the Democrats have weaponized so many of these courts. But if you do the right thing and you pick where to file these cases and you pick them selectively where you have a good chance of winning, and when I mean that, the better chance of getting a judge who may be favorable to you or even a jury who may be favorable to you,
or just
that's
fair.
What we've got to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just fair. And I think what was so frustrating for me, part of Team Trump in the post-election, just, you know, ridiculous nonsense from the courts to say, you know, you don't have standing as a candidate in a presidential election, to say that somehow you don't have standing and you aren't injured by cheating and all of this, you know, the administration of these elections, and to say, no, we're going to kick this out. We don't want to hear it. And then the Supreme Court in the Texas versus Pennsylvania lawsuit to say, you know, no, when we clearly have original jurisdiction, which means under Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, there is no choice but for the Supreme Court to hear the case, regardless of how they ultimately opine and rule on it. They at least have to hear when a state sues another state. And so what's been frustrating, Grant, to so many conservatives who just understand this principle of justice, of fairness, is that the judicial branch seems to be, in a lot of these areas, really hesitant to wade into hot button issues when they shouldn't. It shouldn't matter what the political realm is saying. It should matter what their obligation as impartial jurists is to protect the rights of the American people.
Well, unfortunately, that starts from the very top, which is the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has been very hesitant to take up all important cases. Only recently is it now taking up some of these gun cases. But, you know, the Supreme Court not wanting to hear the president's case about a fraudulent election that had Democrats breaking the Constitution, doing things they shouldn't have done in so many different states. And so I think lower courts are also taking their cue. So this whole idea of no standing, Jen, and really I get this from my many conversations with you and Mayor Giuliani and Joe DiGenova and the whole crew, is that this was their cop-out. It was their way to say, we're just not taking it up, because they didn't want to take it up. So we'll just claim the president doesn't have any standing here and we can wipe our hands clean and we won't be held accountable for the decision that we would have ultimately had to make, which would have been in the president's favor. They just didn't want that on their shoulders. So they came up with this no standing scheme, just like Democrats had their mail-in ballot scheme.
Yeah. And my response to them would be, you know what, if you don't want this responsibility, then get off the bench. Because guess what? You signed up for this when you took that oath of office to support the U.S. Constitution, to be a fair and impartial jurist. Then, you know, whatever the political banter is, whatever the threats are, I mean, and I experienced that. I mean, I'm saying this from experience, you know, having the death threats, having the insane media come after me every which way possible, lie about everything, you know, and try to dig up stuff from your past. And it's like, you know, what are you people even doing? I mean, this is something where at some point you have to be like the founding fathers, who were willing to stand firm and say, we are going to do the right thing because it's the right thing, regardless of how unpopular or what anyone is saying about us. You have to stand up and do the right thing. And Grant, where is that notion of patriotism. It seems like the left is trying to smear that notion of patriotism as somehow the insurrectionist sort of label, that if you have a passion to defend this country, you're equating it with all of these negative terms, rather than saying at the end of the day, we're all Americans.
Well, you know, what we're facing right now is a two-tier justice system, and it isn't fair to everyone involved. Tonight on the Newsmax show, Jenna, I'm actually taking a page from David Horowitz over at The Blaze, who called into question two cases. There's a woman out of Memphis who's accused of murdering a man, shooting at him on his front step, and she also hits his aunt. She walks, and at the time of the shooting, she was facing an attempted murder charge for a road rage incident. She is out on bail for $15,000. You've got an insurrectionist, so-called, right, what they call them, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Hale, who is a Navy reservist. He's got some checkered history as far as racism goes, but never made any threats to anyone. His only crime was being at the Capitol. He didn't injure anybody. He didn't engage in any violence.
How dare you be at a public building, you know?
How dare you? And the courts are holding him indefinitely with no bail. So you say you have a fraudulent election, you get thrown in prison, you try to murder somebody, you're out walking the street.
Yeah, which just shows also that the right to reasonable bail, by the way, is a specifically constitutionally protected right in our Bill of Rights. And the reason the founders gave that and specifically textually enumerated that is because governments are most often likely to infringe against that protected right, our freedom and our liberty. We're going to be right back here on America First. I'm Jenna Ellis talking with my good friend Grant Stinchfield. Follow him right now at Stinchfield1776 and me at Jenna Ellis ESQ. We'll be right back. Welcome back to America First with Jenna Ellis. I am filling in for the great Dr. Sebastian Gorka. That's my best impression of him. And I am joined by my good friend Grant Stinchfield. Follow him now at Stinchfield1776. He is very, very close to 100,000 followers. Let's see if we can break that for him today. And stick around in the second hour. We're talking all about big tech, censorship, how conservatives need to view this issue. And I'm going to have Brooke Rollins is my guest for the next hour. And also our friend John Bachman will be with us in the third hour, who's also on Newsmax. So, Grant, you know, we're talking about all of these issues, and it seems like the big tech censorship is just such a huge issue for Americans. And, you know, you're on social media. We've just, you know, put out your handle, all this. You have the show on Newsmax. And what I can't understand is why some conservatives are willingly stepping off some of these platforms instead of fighting back and saying, no, I'm going to tweet and post whatever I want to stand up against cancel culture.
So I think first off, because you're filling in for Dr. G, when you say my name, Jenny, you have to say Grant.
Grant Stinchfield. There we go. That's a horrible impression, but yeah, okay.
So often when it says my name, I love it. But no, you're right, I'm sticking it out on Twitter. I'm battling the fight there, and I know Dr. G thinks the same way. I know you're doing the same thing. And I'm also dabbling in these other sites as well, because in many places where I can spread my message, which is very similar to your message, I mean, but we blanket the area. And I'm not backing down. You're going to have to kick me off kicking and screaming. Because whether we like it or not, Twitter really is still the main spot that reporters are looking for content, which is one reason why I post things there. It's not just for the people. It's for the media that they need to get a message. And I know President Trump was the same way. One of the reasons why he tweeted was for the media to see what he
was
tweeting.
Absolutely. And you know what? If we're not tweeting, as we're not getting the conservative perspective out there and the conservative opinion, then who will? Then you're just left with, you know, who, Brian Stelter, Potato Head over at CNN, or, you know, Joy Reid. I love when President Trump goes, you know, who is that? That was so great. Over at MSNBC. It's like, we don't want to just let the liberals dominate the narrative. We have to get out there and say, no, this is what conservatism is. We are standing for the Constitution. We are standing firm for the principles of liberty and freedom, and fight back.
You know, I'm convinced, though, that even there, they may not ban me or ban you, but this whole idea of shadow banning, meaning that your post is limited. They're not showing it to everybody. You think you tweeted it out there, but nobody's seeing it. I am confident that happens when I start tweeting about controversial issues like the Wuhan lab and the leak that I believe happened there. And I'll be like, 12 likes. And I'm like, how is this 12 likes on a tweet?
Well, we need to get you more likes. Follow Grant Grunt Stinchfield right now at Stinchfield1776 on Twitter. Grant, thanks so much for joining me. Watch his show 8 p.m. Eastern on Newsmax. And I will be back with you for another 2 hours talking about big tech and censorship right here on America First Today with Jenna Ellis.